Huh? Is the good doctor in the building?
What's how you doing, going brother? On, man?
Yo, so
happy to, see to you, have man. You on the men's demo.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you.
I'm excited to chop it up and get into the conversation,
oh,
man. Coming up from DC.
Yes, sir.
You know, I was on the Amtrak.
Yeah, man. Hopped up here yesterday morning.
Yeah, but I appreciate you coming through to the men's den, getting yes, a chance sir. To talk with you. Lots of things that we could talk about. I'm so excited to get in the conversation. But again, just thank you for so much for coming up.
Man, it's good to be here, man. It's a dope setup. I've been excited to just talk, man. I think our fields really overlap. You do a lot of good work, man, and you know it's all about working with black men. So I'm just glad to be here and talk with you.
That's what it is, working with black men. I think, again, when we come together and work together, the things we can accomplish are just simply outstanding. And so, you know, when it comes to the men's den, a lot of times, you know, when black men see each other, when they get together, it's always, yo, bro, you know, I'm trying to be like you, you know, I'm trying to get like you, you know, that kind of, and here the men's den, we're a little bit unhumble, a little bit more braggadocio, right? That's what we do when we go in the men's den. So how I like to start the show is, man, tell me why you are him. Why are you one of them ones? Why are you that guy? I know, because I brought you on here. Like, you know what I'm saying? I already know. I could read the LinkedIn.
This is different.
I want to hear from you. You know what I'm saying? Why are you him? Why are you one of them ones?
So this is definitely different. I will say I've definitely been in those settings where people like don't really feel comfortable talking about themselves, but I'm gonna push myself. So I'm a clinical psychologist and a psychoanalytic scholar based in Washington, D.C.
Say that one more time.
A psychoanalytic scholar.
Woo! That sound fire. You know what I'm saying? You him just off that. I'm a psychoanalytic scholar. Talk to me nice.
So I study psychoanalysis, okay, which is a particular type of therapy that really goes deep beyond the surface into helping people understand their unconscious mind. So it's about self-awareness just like on a being, on steroids.
We're gonna get into that.
Yeah.
So I want to break our conversation up into two things. We're gonna talk a little bit about love and relationships.
Yeah,
and then we'll get into. I want to get into some healing.
For sure.
Emotions in men. And so starting with just love. Tell me about your own just love journey.
Yeah. Absolutely. So first, let me also share, because this is also part of what I do. So I have a practice in DC, a therapy practice for adults and couples, called Hopkins Behavioral Health. And we specialize in just doing culturally competent therapy that goes beyond the surface. And so I think this will be important for our conversation too, because I work with couples. I help people to deepen and enhance their love and to do the hard work that's necessary to have sustainable intimacy.
Sustainable intimacy. That's an article, that's a book right there. Like, I mean, sustainable intimacy. I mean, I think a lot of us are trying to achieve that.
Yeah, so I took that with me on my love journey, you know, and I try to, help other couples have that as well. But for me personally, so I often get this question, like, is it hard to date as a couples therapist, right? Mm-hmm. And
That you took the question away from me, because I'm like, wait, because when you know, if you know everything, but you know, when you're the coach, how do you become the player?
Yeah, and I don't know everything, right? Like, this is a big misnomer about couples therapy or therapy in general, that there's no prescribed way to have love or to have a relationship. Mm. There's no prescribed way to find happiness, satisfaction in life, or intimacy with another person. So really what I am an expert in is helping people to understand themselves better so that they can better communicate their needs with their partner and have some mutual understanding that really goes into a closeness and a friendship and a bond that really feels like love. So for me, in terms of my own, you know, there's the therapy work, but in terms of my own journey of finding love, what was really important to me is that I make sure that I find somebody that I can have just a mutual understanding with, someone that I can be friends with, someone I can really deep connection with. Living in DC is wild. It's a wonderful social environment.
Chocolate City.
It's chocolate city for real. It's a wonderful social environment, but it can be hard. You know, I'm someone who's really passionate about his work. Mm-hmm. I find purpose in it. I put a lot into it, and so, you know, finding time to socialize, it's really, really important to me, but I want to get the most for my time, and I want to be really intentional. So, you know, dating with that in mind, it can be challenging at times because, like, you know, it can be really demoralizing, I think, swiping on apps and trying to find a partner that way. So when I was single, that's what everyone does, right? And it's, you know, there's not a lot of buy-in with apps. Like, you just swipe and, you know, you start talking to somebody for a few days. You don't decide, someone decides not to respond. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, there's really no, the pleasantries kind of go by the wayside, I think. And people are just kind of, you know, there for all sorts of different motives. So for me, after, you know, just being really disappointed time and time again, frustrated with the apps, feel like I was wasting my time, like I actually decided to do something different and, you know, be more intentional. And so I decided to work with Carpe Diem, actually, which is a matchmaking service specifically for Black professionals. And that served me well. I just really like the idea of investing in the process of finding another partner, which to me, like, really aligns with all of the intentionality that's really important to me when it comes to relationships.
Now, see, you know, I think sometimes this term, it might be like high value, high quality, but you, sir, are a high value, high quality Black man. So tell me about choosing Carpe Diem as the vehicle, the app, the pathway to finding love.
Yeah. I like, well, one, again, like with the apps, like there's just such low buy-in. Like, you can be there one moment and then the next moment, you know, people decide, well, you know, they just don't want to put their time into that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different intentions on the apps. But, you know, with Carpe Diem, with the matchmaking process, what for me put me at ease is knowing that there's somebody else that is thinking about you and who you are and trying to be intentional in matching you with someone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I'm a couples therapist. I like there being depth and thought put into, you know, the partner that you choose. I'm not someone that believes in quick connection or superficial connection. Mm-hmm. And so just having that kind of comfort to know that there's something intentional that is going into this on the other end, right? Somebody else is coming in with buy-in as well. It was dope, man. It's I wanted to have a partner, and so this is just felt like a good way for me to go.
Definitely. No problem with all it.
I'm sorry. I'm just gonna put this right here.
Okay.
Oh, you can hear the scratching? Yeah. Got it. Good. All right. So, and thinking about that, tell me about the value in investing and paying, you know, to find love in your forever.
Yeah, so I'll say this, right? I think one of the biggest challenges when it comes to dating, period, especially if you are a cis, het, like, well-educated man who's, you know, doing things with his professionally or with his career, is that you actually have a lot of options, right? Like, socially, there is a ratio that advantages you, right? And sometimes having a lot of options actually ends up being a barrier to us doing the necessary work to have sustainable intimacy, right? Like, connecting with someone, it takes effort. Like, relationships don't just, you know, take off on their own. People have to work toward understanding themselves, what wounds they carry, what trauma they bring into the relationship, what they're looking for deeply, what they might be afraid of when it comes to intimacy. And they have to understand all of those things and be able to communicate about it in order to have a good long-term relationship. So from that standpoint, whether it's like financially or with your emotional energy or with time or your self-work, right? Relationships are an investment. So the idea of investing all around, it fit well for me.
And, you're just piquing my interest because sometimes as a Black man, and there can be definitely plenty of options, you don't think about using a service. So can you walk me through what that experience was like in terms of using Carpe Diem to get to that, to meet your person?
Yeah, so they start with an interview. There's a lot of like background. Mm. They make sure that your desires and like your right, whether that be like financially, professionally, what you want long term, if you're looking for marriage, if you want children, like all of those things kind of align. And then there's an interview process to figure out like what's most important to you, right? Like what really matters the most to you when it comes to connecting with someone, you know, and they do their best to kind of match you up. You have a 15-minute initial conversation, and then with the person that you're matched with, a video mm-hmm. conversation, and then from there, right, the couple can decide whether they want to continue. So it's a really different model.
I'm really, you got me like thinking, you know, I'm sitting here like, you know, some might say I'm a high quality brother, you know, and so maybe I need to look into that. But also tell me a little about the role, like, so you the role around trust and transparency and matchmaking services.
I know that they're really intentional. Mm-hmm. I know that they're really open about what they're doing on their end, and there's a mutual communication between you and the matchmaker. There's always space for there to be questions asked, I think, on both ends to kind of like hone the search.
Yeah, I feel like a light bulb's going off in my brain yeah. a little bit about like, you know, cause I know that as a black man, there's sometimes even maybe some misconceptions around if there's like there's a lot of women out there, but is there really, you know, mm-hmm. In terms of like what you're, because when you really dig in and you become intentional, that's how that pool can shrink to be like, oh, now I know exactly, you know, what I'm looking for. But why, in your opinion, should more black men think about matchmaking services in terms of finding their person?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, what I was saying before about like, you know, being intentional. Like if you want to have a relationship, right, then it's going to take work, and there is going to be sacrifice. And the other thing is that if, you know, we can kind of get caught up in the fallacy that there's always going to be something better. And I think better is always where like you water the grass, right? The grass isn't always green on the other side. It's greener where you water it. So if you want a relationship, if that's what you're intentionally going for, being intentional, I think finding a service that also helped you to be intentional, that was really helpful. And then like leaning in to do the work, right? Like, is there going to be someone better? No, like the someone better is in you and in the work that you do with the other person, right? Like, so that's really what I think like love and relationships is all about. It's about like leaning in to try to understand each other and be the best you that you can with the other person and helping them be the best person that they can be. So for a lot of the black men out there, I would say like be cautious to not fall into the trap of there is always going to be something better. Mm. And to try to lean into work to build the kind of intimacy that you want, because that can really reveal to you the person that's already there, the quality of the relationship you already have.
Yeah, it makes me think of J. Cole's song, Love Yours.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, he's always, like, even when you're like, you know, it's always gonna be a better car, it's prettier woman, better clothes, but you gotta love yours, right? And
right,
then, and
right,
then
right.
also, you know, do the work. As we shift gears just a little bit, why is it challenging for men to find time or to be intentional to do the work?
Man, that's a great question. I got a lot to say about this. So I think, and I mean, and some of it's cliche, and we've heard of it before, but it's not cliche in the sense that it lives within us, and it's something that we really do struggle with, right? Like, particularly for black men. You know, we've all grown up in spaces where we've heard the messages, right? This is what it means to be a man. You got to be strong. You got to be tough. You got to have your armor on. You got to make sure you protect and provide. I always go back to this like funny joke that Chris Rock told in the stand-up a while back. And it's funny because it's true to some extent. He said, you know, only women and dogs are loved unconditionally. Like, if you're a man, you have to bring something to the table.
Come on.
And
that's, I think a lot of brothers, that it resonates.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, only dogs, kids, women love unconditionally.
But what's on the other side of that is men who feel like all they are good for is their output, mm-hmm. right? Their service, what they can do for other people. And then you mix that in with messages like boys don't cry, like, you know, suck it up, man up. It's all these things that basically tell men, like, whatever's going on inside of you does not matter. Mm-hmm. Your internal world, you don't need to connect with that. You actually just need to make sure that you're armored up and doing everything that you can for other people in this world, right? Happy wife, happy life. The story ends there. That is it. That's what matters.
I hate that term. Maybe not hate. I understand this premise. I think it's happy spouse, happy house. We need to really lean into that, but.
Yeah, but also like both people need to be happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so for a lot of us men, like we're disadvantaged. Emotions are sensory information about what's going on with us, mm-hmm. right? Similar to like taste, touch, sight, it's sensory information. The different thing about emotions is that we actually have to kind of take our time to be introspective to understand what it is that they're telling us. Emotions are actually expressions of our needs. And if we can understand and be with our emotions and reckon with what they mean, we're actually more informed about what we need. So a lot of us brothers are actually disadvantaged in determining the things that we need and what's going on with us internally to be able to connect and actually communicate and move in ways that actually fulfill us, right? We're taught from a very early age, detach and produce. And so this work is particularly tough for us, right? Like you build up years of having that armor and kind of following in this path of doing rather than thinking or reflecting or being in touch with oneself, it really becomes tough. But I've seen time and time again, men who really do take the time to devote themselves to doing this kind of work, the world opens up. It's more possibilities for who they can be. And that self-love can really take off from there.
Yeah, self-love, vulnerability, empathy, these are strength finders, if you will, right? Like when we lean into them and we really own them, where we get to go, the barriers we can break through, the walls we can knock down, when we own, like what I think is like the comprehensive nature of what it means to be a Black man, or even comprehensiveness of masculinity, because we grow up learning 50% of it. But we need to really lean into what is right. 100% of it, because we only have learned 50%. And so if we don't have the other 50, we can't be the best men we'd be for ourselves, yeah. for our families, and for society at
large. And there's a whole lot in that other 50, right? About like, I mean, like just what we feel, like what we need to feel love, like the things that make us fulfilled. It's a journey for us to get back in touch with our humanity, you know? And there's so much value in that.
One quote that sometimes I struggle, people use it a lot, and I struggle when people use it, is it's the Booker T. Washington, it's easier to repair children than to fix.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking
about. To fix broken, yeah, yeah. I'm messing up just a little bit, because I don't like it.
I know what you're talking about though, I know.
Right, and I think sometimes when we hear that quote, it's almost like leave men broken. Right. And I think about the work that we do with youth, and like, I need every man at the table. But if we're leaving men broken, that means that we aren't allowing them to really dig into their trauma and the things that they've experienced. So tell me a little about how we do a better job at creating spaces and giving men the opportunity to dig into the trauma that they may have experienced throughout their life, so that they can be come out on the other side better than they were before they started.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, one of the ways I took that quote is like, you know, it's easier to address it when you're young, but it does kind of give like maybe a bit of a bad thought on the back end. I think, first of all, it's important to understand like trauma is ubiquitous, right? It's anything that we experience as being too much, too fast, all at once to ourselves, to other people we love, or just things that are important to us, right? So if we witness something happening that's violating to another Black person, that's traumatic, right? It obviously doesn't have to happen to us, and it also doesn't have to necessarily happen to a person. It can be something that's so important to us, right? Like For example, policies, right, that are broken down, like affirmative action going under attack, Roe v. Wade being under attack, right? Those are important to us because it says something about the value of our humanity, right? So those can be considered small traumas as well. So it's ubiquitous. We've all have experiences that don't feel good in the worst way, right? I think part of what makes trauma hard to access sometimes is because there's a residue of shame that's left behind around how we feel about it. And especially for young men and even older men, if you're not supposed to feel, right? If you're not supposed, right, to be a man is to not feel so much. Naturally, when you feel, and because life is life and humans feel, right? To feel is to exist, to be human is to feel. So naturally, when we do feel, what happens is a lot of times we go into hiding, right? We don't want to reveal that part to us, right? We feel too vulnerable or too exposed. So I think, one, having this change in our culture where we're having conversations about it and saying it really is okay to not be okay. It really is okay to encounter circumstances in your life where you don't have the answers, where you're sincerely struggling, and even feel like you're suffering or don't know which way is up. And that in itself starts to erode at the shame that keeps trauma dormant and leaves folks in like running into hiding. So that in itself is really helpful. Having conversations like this, and I think communicating to other brothers of the youth that, listen, life is life, we're gonna have issues, and it's okay to struggle. And the things that happen to you that are hurtful, they're not okay. And it's we have to feel our way through and not necessarily work or perform our way through.
Mm. Work or perform our way through. I think that's, I mean, I don't know a man who hasn't thought that's the process by which they have to move through life.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could name one. And so even thinking about that, tell me about your own, like, even in the field that you're in, like when you were growing up, is that what you wanted to do? Did you have a moment growing up or experience where you're like, okay, this is where, like, I know what it was for me to want to, you know, really focus on like emotional intelligence. But for you, what was that moment? You're like, okay, because it's one thing that I'm going to be in like the social sciences, but I'm going to like this area right here.
Yeah, that's a good question. It certainly was never one moment. I do think that I was, kind of just the one in my friend group. I was, you know, it was that kind of like cliche friend. It's like, I'm the one that people go to talk to, right? Or if they want advice, not that therapists give advice. That's like a thing for me. It's like, I help people understand themselves. I don't tell them what to do. I think that's more valuable. But I was that friend in when I was younger in the friend group that was like, I was the sound listening board, and you know, people felt like, you know, they could come to me to talk, and I saw the value in that. My grandfather is actually a barbershop owner, and so I grew up in that barbershop, and it was really like a community hub, and I just saw the value in like having conversation that went past your every day to day. Is like, bro, I'm trying to be like you one day, like, you know, like just to like the banter, but actually, like, you know, whether it be debates or dialogue that was just really passionate, like I really enjoyed that vibe. And so I took that further because I realized there was also something missing, and that was the part about like connecting when things are not going well and like being honest and vulnerable and genuine about it. So it's both a part of what I saw and what I didn't see, right? Just, I really do feel like the profession kind of chose me in that way. Mm-hmm. Like I've always been a person. I have a friend who said like, he's just deep for no reason sometimes. Like he just be just thinking too far into things. And that's just always how I've been. I think people are fascinating. I think our minds are fascinating. And I like to get into the weeds and the nuances of who we are and why. And so I think it's a calling for sure.
I feel like when I think about, well, how old are you?
I am in my mid-30s.
Mid-30s.
Yeah.
Me too. And I think about like our generation, and we have the the growth that we have as men from the previous generation is like, it's like huge, but there's like no real way to measure it. Like we talk about therapy, we are doing things that like our parents, they're like, that's not even like a foreign concept, you know, to do some of those things, I think, in terms of thinking about it at scale. And so I'm thinking about, what's your hopes around the next generation in terms of like us passing this along when we have our own children and so on?
Yeah, the way that I like to think about it is that we have more free range to be who we are. We have more opportunity to be human in whatever unique form resonates with our soul in ways that our ancestors could never, because of so many reasons, right? They were, you know, they're robbed of obviously socioeconomic resources and opportunities, but also I think on a psychological and on a trauma kind of way, they're just robbed of the opportunity to just be more human. And I think we have started gradually from generation to generation recognizing how incredibly messed up that is, right? And fighting back, I think really rebellion against the powers that be to say, hey, like it's okay for us to want rest. It's okay for us to not be okay. And maybe I don't want to be who society says I have to be. I can just be me. So, you know, I see on TikTok, like the Gen Zers who are like, they're not taking this like crap from work anymore. It's like they're serious about their time off. They're more serious about balance. I think millennials are on that same wavelength, right? Like balance is important. Health and well-being are also important. We don't just want to be like vessels of production. We also want to enjoy our lives too. So I hope this next generation, especially of Black men, are able to just keep leaning into that, being open to living a life that is uniquely constructed by them for them.
As somebody who's doing couples therapy and being the strong friend, what do you do?
That's a good way to put it.
Huh?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Who takes care of you? How do you find, you know, like in my head, it's like one reason why there's a carpe diem and you can use that because like it's to find your person. Cause like, yo, I'm right. Always the person pouring into others, right? There's lots of strong friends out there, right? Yeah. How do you as the strong friend find the places and the support that you need so that you can get restored, you can get rejuvenated, yeah. and you can heal because you are that person for so many.
Yeah, yeah. I love what I do for a living, and because I love what I do, I'm especially susceptible to doing too much. So I'm really, I have friends that are strong for me, you know, and I know when I'm doing too much, and after a long day, I'll call them up. I'll call up my partner. They'll know whether I'm in a venting mode, or if I'm in a, you know, let's dialogue or give me what you think kind of mode. And you know, so I think I've communicated with the folks that are close to me about what I need, and the people who know me well around those kind of things. I think I'm also good about, like, at the end of the day, like decompressing and just not uploading everything, but downloading and like taking some time for silence and quiet and getting all my thoughts down. And for me, that's really rejuvenating.
You said something that really just piqued my interest. You talked about when you talk to people, you can be in a venting mode or do you want dialogue? I know that how do you communicate to people to build a relationship where they know, or do you have to outwardly just say it so they know? Like, how did that, like, I've always struggled with that, because sometimes, yeah. I'm like, I'm talking to somebody, I don't really want you to ask me no questions.
Yeah.
I just want you to listen to me
talk about
what I'm challenged with. Then other times, you tell somebody something, you're like, why are you not asking me no questions?
Yeah,
right.
Are you listening to me?
You want to know? Yeah. So yeah. How did you create that? That's really interesting to me, because I know me and probably many other people struggle with like wanting somebody to respond in a specific way based off the issue, or like I said, whether you want the dialogue or you want like, yo, just listen.
Yeah, so this is a little bit of the therapist in me. So like one thing I say to my patients is I'm not the kind of therapist that gives advice or tells you what to do. I think advice is really easy to give and it's often wrong because it may be based on what someone else feels, their own unique psychology, and not really, it's not really based on who you are and what's going on with you. And so we need to, you know, you need to be able to understand yourself well enough to kind of use the wisdom within. I'm big on that. Right, like, and that's not to say that I'm gonna have all the answers all the time, but I'm not big on like getting advice. I want somebody to kind of validate how I feel and kind of understand how I feel. The other thing I say is like, you know, unsolicited advice is criticism, because you know, so you're kind of telling somebody what they should do without them having like asked for that kind of feedback. It kind of implies like you're not doing something that you should or could be doing that's better. Right. So, but everyone's different, right? Some people just want their friend to like tell them, it's like, hey, this is what I think you should do. And they trust their friend's, sound analysis of the issue. So I would say like, it's gotta be a conversation, right? Like it's like, hey, I just need you to hear me out and validate what I'm saying, understand why I feel the way I do. Or like, I need some input on this. Like I need to know, what do you think is the best thing to do in this situation, right? Like if you were me, like how would you navigate this? That you gotta communicate what your needs are. They're gonna change, and you know, and assuming that people will know is a recipe for disaster.
Mm. Moving into a little bit of this couples therapy.
Yeah.
When should somebody look into couples therapy? Because I feel like sometimes it should be like from the jump, like, all right, you're my girlfriend. Yeah. We should do couples therapy, right? So you could talk about some of the things that, you know, because like sometimes I think maybe there'll be like cards you can use to get to deeper conversations. But yeah. I don't know, I'm interested in like, when should you do couples therapy? Like, I don't know if you should wait till you propose and then you do couples therapy, because that might be too late, because then you find said, nah, I already spent like 10 racks on this ring. And like, you know, I don't know. I'm just, you know, help me out.
I think every couple, if you have an appetite to better understand yourself and the other person, every couple can benefit from couples therapy. And I love the idea of like when you decide that you're serious about a person, also enlisting the support of a therapist to aid you in the journey of having a sustainable intimacy. The way that I approach it, so I talked to you earlier about like psychoanalytic therapy, like understanding the subconscious mind. The large majority of our psychology is subconscious. Like there's more that we don't know about ourselves than what we do know about ourselves. Mm. And that's just the way the human mind is set up. And that's actually backed by neuroscience, because we have more systems of memory that are unconscious and systems of memory that are conscious. Mm. When it comes to couples, right, people choose their partner based off of two kind of
break it down. Help me out. I'm on a struggle bus, so okay. I'm learning something here.
So people choose their partners for two reasons.
Okay.
One is because they are drawn to in that person a dynamic of love that is familiar.
Mm, okay.
That's part of what attraction actually is. Yeah, there's a physical aspect of it, but beyond that, there's also some sort of subconscious, and I think this is universal, imagination that you can play out something that is familiar, the love that is familiar to you, and that's both the positive qualities and the negative qualities. Mm. And why do we do that? Because what's familiar feels safe. It feels like we can control it, we're used to it, it feels manageable. And the second reason that we will choose someone is because we want to do something with the negative qualities of that familiar love that we couldn't have done in our past. We're trying to kind of like work out a dynamic. So someone who's been abandoned before might not choose a partner who just runs away and abandons them, but gets really caught up in work a lot and isn't always there in the way that they might want, right? And so they're gonna try to kind of like, you know, bring to the partner their concerns about like really being there with them, right? And so I think this is a big part of relationships. It's kind of like doing the dance of working through how you've experienced trauma in your life and what you're looking for in the other partner because of these sensitive areas that we all have around love and intimacy, right? We need love to survive. We need intimacy to survive. So when we're really, really young, we learn ways to increase our chances of getting love and to decrease our chances of getting left behind and rejected. We have these roadmaps when our brain is just developing, before we even have a prefrontal cortex. Mm. We learn these ways to kind of make sure our parents are more happy with us or less happy with us. And that becomes the lens through which we approach relationships, right? And we can't really work out the consequences or side effects of choosing the ways that we choose, right? They're just our best guess. And just like when you're when you learn to tie your shoes, like once you learn that, you move on to learn something else. It's subconscious. You don't think about how to do it again. So too is our approach to relationships. We kind of develop these early roadmaps early on to increase our chances of having a good time versus a bad time. That becomes like what we understand about relationships. We kind of go on autopilot. We follow these roadmaps. And so the work of therapy is really understanding what your roadmaps are, what needs kind of get met or don't get met because of those roadmaps, and being able to communicate with your partner around the emotions that are evoked along that journey and how they might trigger certain things in there that that can trouble communication for the both of you.
I feel like I appreciate everything you're saying, but you're like a role model in this love space, you know, in terms of the things that you're sharing, and then you found your forever through Carpe Diem. And I am strongly considering, just through our whole conversation, because I feel like I've done that work. I've had therapy. I don't have insurance at the moment, so therapy has a little bit, we'll get back to that, right now, but so I've done the work, but I had, therapists for a good amount of time and did that work. And so as we kind of come to a close, what advice do you have for me, to so that I can find my forever? You got me a Carpe Diem. I'm all in right now. Like, it was matchmaking, because it sounded like you did the work. You had this support. Yeah. And so I'm going to have to follow. That's why I say role model, because I think I need to follow the same suit.
First, you might want to enlist some help, finding your forever. So, Carpe Diem is not a bad option for that. Might hit up Nathan, figure that out. Also, find a therapist. That's number one for sure. But continue to do the work, man. It's a journey. We don't go into therapy to overcome and master our subconscious mind or to master our psychology. We just come to understand it better, right? I think the best way to describe a really sound mental health is if you can look at yourself like a snow globe, and you just kind of take stock of everything that's in there with a little bit of awe, a little wonder, some curiosity. And marvel at it to some degree too. And for the things that you don't like to look at, being able to still look at them and still have a sense of awe and curiosity about what they're about. Keep doing the work, man. And definitely therapy is a great place to do that. I'm biased, of course, but.
No, I mean, these are the conversations we gotta have in the men's den, right? Talking about therapy, talking about love and how to find it, how to do the work in ourselves. This is important. And I just really, really appreciate the way you broke things down, brought in some of that neuroscience as well. I'm sitting here, I'm listening, I'm taking it all in. I'm happy we're video and recording everything too, because there's so many gems that not only do I'm taking away, but I know many other Black men could take away as we look to become the comprehensive men that we need to be for ourselves, for our partners, and for society.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. This health thing is it's a lifelong thing.
Doc, I appreciate you taking time to just come and hang out in the men's den.
This is dope, man. I gotta come back.
We had a really great conversation. I'm excited. Before we close, what's next for you? What can we expect from you this year and beyond?
Yeah, definitely my practice is growing. That's Hopkins Behavioral Health at hopkinsbehavioralhealth.com. I'm hoping to get more into writing from a psychoanalytic lens. I also do a lot of speaking engagements.
Because you're a psychoanalytic
therapist.
Yes.
Scholar.
Yes.
Yes. Right. But I also do psychoanalytic therapy.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of speaking engagements and consultation. I'm kind of getting into preservation space to help tell our stories from a trauma-informed narrative, tell Black history from a trauma-informed narrative. So
just tell me a little more of that, because that's, people need to hear that, because that's something, you know, they'd be making the slave movies, and he's like, all right, come on, can I get the affirmative aspect of this? So tell me just a little bit more what you're going to do there.
Sure. It's really quick. So last year, I had the pleasure of working with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and they helped procure the National Monuments for Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley. And the whole... Emmett's mom, Mamie, she really kind of embodies what trauma healing is all about, because of her courageousness and having an open casket for her son in Chicago. It was so horrific for her to look at. Can't imagine the overwhelming grief, but she also stood there and faced it, and she allowed the world to see as well. And that actually catalyzed the civil rights movement, right? So as ugly as our trauma is, as painful as it is, we actually tap into some real growth fostering abilities when we can really, you know, reckon with it and look at it and deal with what is. So I think in telling our stories from the narrative of what's been wounded, we also have a clearer understanding of how we heal and how we can support each other in that journey of healing.
Dr. Justin, you, I'm excited to see that. Let us know how we can support that. Black men can, sure. And men's den. I just love that perspective and what you just shared, and we need more of that. I think a lot of people, especially Black people, can benefit from that. But I thank you for taking time to come on the Men's Den, rock out with me, have a really powerful conversation. Sure, and I look forward to just staying connected and keep building.
Let's do that. Appreciate you, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks. All right.